This segment of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Power Women Investing, Ronstadt Insurance, and Mayfield Florists.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for your further listening pleasure,
direct from the golf course and onto your radio, this is...
Hello, everybody.
...the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is the Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeff.
Correct.
And we invite people to visit us at fredandjeff.com, follow us on Twitter, like us on Facebook, and you can even subscribe to this tome of wisdom and entertainment on iTunes. Now, Jeffrey, you know, we typically celebrate everything going down on in Tucson and Southern Arizona. But this week, we are spending some time up in the Valley of the Sun in Phoenix at the Phoenix Comic-Con, the annual Comic-Con up at the Convention Center downtown Phoenix.
That's right.
Now, but the cool thing about it is we're talking to Tucsonans about all their stuff that's going on with them. We have people making comic books who are creating, drawing, writing comic books. We have some really cool cosplayers.
Yeah, we're going to meet the guys from, what was it, Orbital Decay?
Orbital Decay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great, great little book that they've come out with. I think they got four issues out
now. They're looking for some publishers.
Yeah.
And we get some really cute, I shouldn't say cute, some really cool cosplayers.
Right, and then we're going to try to hook up with some national guys.
Yeah,
and
I'm
just
hoping.
Say hello.
And, yeah, I'm hoping to talk to the guys from Cyanide and Happiness, who they are brilliantly evil.
Yes, right up your alley. Right up your alley.
This is my alley. So, but there is stuff going on in Tucson and Southern Arizona, and we were talking about these things. Cox Communications has started Movies in the Park program with a projector and a repurposed bedsheet. And so...
What?
They started Movies in the Park.
Right.
With a projector and a repurposed bedsheet.
Where did you read that? Because I think that's hilarious.
That's their info.
Oh, that's hilarious.
So now it's 10 years later they're doing it, and I think it's better than a bedsheet nowadays. But so folks will be able to see some really high end movies out at the Demeester. It's free, family friendly. Just bring out your blankets, your chairs. Wanted some food. You know, we always brought either EG's or Lucky Wishbone. That was always our favorite.
Right.
When we'd go to the Pops or something at Demeester.
Still is.
Still is, yeah. So coming up in July, How to Train Your Dragon.
Fun.
In August, they have The Chronicles of Narnia, Voyage of the Dawn Treader.
The Chronicles of Narnia.
Yeah. Actually,
that reminds
August...
me of that old Saturday Night Live skit that Adam Sandberg did.
No.
The Chronicles of Narnia.
No, I didn't ever
see it. If you haven't seen it, folks, just go online and look up Adam Sandberg and the Chronicles of Narnia. Pretty funny.
And let's see, Night at the Museum. And well, I was going to say, August is packed. It's got three Fridays. First is Chronicles of Narnia, then Night at the Museum, and then Mr. Peabody and Sherman.
Love that.
That's huge out over at the Demeester. And that's a lot of, I mean, that's just...
A lot of family fun.
A lot of family fun. Our friends over at Children's Museum Tucson have a lot of stuff going on. We encourage you to be a member of Children's Museum Tucson. And here's one of the benefits. Monday, June 23rd and June 30th, from 5 to 7 p.m., they have cool summer evenings. It's a members-only recreation program. From 5 to 7 on Monday, June 23rd and the 30th. May 25th through August 30th, every Sunday, $2 admission. And they have a science, technology, engineering, arts, and mathematics camp, I guess you would call it, which is called STEAM Sundays. They have insect discovery, make it magic. Mini time machine museum will be out there. Puppets Among Us, the Girl Scouts, a lot of fun.
Wow, that sounds like a lot of fun.
Going on at Tucson Children's Museum, or Children's Museum Tucson. One day I will say that correctly.
We're all waiting, Fred, but it's okay.
Yeah, It is okay. And then let's see, Friday, the 4th of July, they're having a big time celebration. Celebrate America's birth with Children's Museum Tucson for a special Kid Pendants Day.
Kid Pendants. I love that.
So there'll be all sorts of fun out there. It's a regular admission for non-members and free for members out at Children's Museum Tucson.
Super fun.
June 21st, Jeffrey, which is the summer solstice.
First day of summer, right.
As you like to call it.
Yes. It's a very important date.
I have no idea why you would say that.
Yes, you do.
I really just don't.
Okay.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Okay.
So at Lawn Cantata Shopping Center is Splash. And it's $25, and you get to support the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance. There's going to be libations and food, fashion, entertainment, live art, silent auction, and all sorts of fun activities. And they're looking for some volunteers, people who help out with goodie bags, models if you want to be a runway model, all sorts of stuff. So if you want to get involved with the Southern Arizona Arts and Cultural Alliance this summer, the Splash event on June 21st is exactly where you want to be.
And, you know, the one thing I want to talk about, though, Fred.
What's that?
Is our friends at the Beads of Courage.
Oh, what is Gene Baruch up to?
Well, they just came out with their 10 artist beads, or their 10. They had the challenge bead. They had a joy bead and an inspire, love, strength, hope, laugh, life, spirit, courage, and peace. And all these artists came out with their new beads. And funny enough, my daughter Mia, an honored sibling of Larry, our boy, actually got to create the courage bead. Was created by Mia. She won the national contest to create a bead. She won, and her bead is outstanding. So, folks, please support our friends at the Beads of Courage.
But you know, we haven't talked about this in a long time, and we are way behind the eight ball on this, my dear brother. But we promised to get 1,000 people to carry a bead.
Right.
They have a carry a bead program, and what that is you get a little packet for $10. You get a packet. It contains two beads and a note card. And what you do is you carry those beads on, say you're running a half marathon, or even running a 5K, or taking a walk in your neighborhood.
Yeah, you go up to Mount Lemmon for an afternoon with the family. Anything that is, you know, that is important to you, and you take that bead with you, and you put your good energy in it,
yeah.
And then you write about it, and you send the bead to a kid, or you send it back to Beads of Courage, and they give it to a child who's struggling or having a hard time.
And you get to write a note with the note card. You say, "Hey, I hope this bead. You know, I carried this bead as I was walking Sabino Canyon. I hope it brings you some encouragement." Because, you know, these kids are going through
tough stuff.
Tough times. I mean, yep. Every treatment, all the other stuff, it's horrible. So
more on the Beads of Courage at fredandjeff.com. And folks, big show today. Stick around. We'll have more here on the Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Anthony Cigar Emporium, the Downtown Tucson Partnership, and Sleeping Frog Farms.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we're talking about the people, the places, events, history, and culture that make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful, Jeffrey.
So why are we in Phoenix?
Well, sometimes you got to make a sacrifice.
Ooh, you know, I said the dreaded P word.
Yeah, Tempe Normal.
Ugh.
But we are at the Phoenix Downtown Convention Center at the Phoenix Comic Con.
Right.
having a great time. And with us are the creators, the creative geniuses of Orbital Decay, Mike Isham and Jacob Rickerish.
Hi, I'm Jacob.
I'm Mike.
So do your names again so people can remember how you sound.
I'm Jacob.
He's a cuter one.
With
taller one.
I work out a lot, so, yeah.
You know, there's a lot of people here that work out. You're just kind of one of the crowd.
As far as the people that are listening, no, I work out a lot.
Well, yeah, a lot of people who work out here at Comic-Con, they worked out by buying plastic or foam six-packs.
Oh, yeah, spray paint.
Spray paint, yeah.
That's awesome.
Corsets, a lot of things like that.
Yeah, so, yeah. I'm Mike. I am an example of physical perfection. So I don't need to work out. I don't need to work out all of me.
Oh, I was just saying, like the top of your head?
Yeah, no, I mean, I have to cover myself up with a lot of layers so that, you know, I don't want to make anybody feel
off.
That. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Yeah, I get you.
I'm married. I don't want to make it weird.
I get it. So now, which of you two is who's the artist, who's the writer?
We both write it, and Jacob is the artist.
All right, yes. So Jacob, is this your first go at a comic book?
I've done a lot of, I used to do comic strips a lot, and web comics is where I start off. I still do a weekly webcomic, and this is my first book that I ever did, yeah.
Now, if someone wants to go online to find your webcomic, where would they go?
All right, get ready. It's www.thecomedyofjacobbreckenridge.com.
That's an easy one.
Yeah.
I love that you had to clarify www, just so in case people don't know how to use the internet.
Well, yeah.
Or Google.
Our mom is listening, so it helps.
Yeah, I know.
And she'll be clicking away right now.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You guys, it's http://www.
Perfect. All right, so what was the genesis behind Orbital Decay?
It originally started, it was a little strip that I had thought of, and then I ran out of topics and ideas to write for it really fast.
Like after the second strip?
I made it about six strips, and that was about it.
That's better.
There's like three panel strips?
Yeah, so there's these three panel strips and single panel strips that I was doing, and it was called SPF 9000, Satellite Project of the Future 9000. If you notice, I really like choosing really long names for things that people will
forget.
That way
they stick out.
Yeah, exactly. But then I realized I needed somebody who was really knowledgeable about sci-fi to make it really work and come together, so that's where I asked Mike for his...
Craigslist ad?
A Craigslist ad for Mike. And then it was...
Missed connections.
Yeah.
Nice. How long have you guys known each other?
5 years.
Yeah, 5 years.
You were dating for most of that, weren't you?
Yeah, but it was a clean breakup, so, you know, we're okay hanging out and working together and being friends.
That's
so
great.
We can keep that separate.
That's perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so a lot of artists can't do that nowadays. You know, you get something good going, and there's some kind of rift, and, you know...
It's over.
It's over.
Yeah.
Like, happens. See that guy over there with the big spike head?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we'll for try all to the listeners.
Yeah, we'll try to get a picture of him, folks.
listeners, trust me, it is very spiky.
It's very spiky.
But he works out a lot, too. So.
But I just noticed that his girlfriend went to the left, and he's still going. Oh, I got to get a picture.
Well, I think his horn mask limits his eyesight there.
That's all right.
Oh, that's awesome.
So you guys are into issue 4 of Orbital Decay.
Yeah.
And it's the first, I guess, complete... story arc in the saga.
Yeah.
Now, I heard this once described as think about Star Trek without the Prime Directive.
Right, yeah, that's a really good way. We've also been describing it as Archer meets Star Trek.
Oh, that's a good one too.
Yeah, so you can thank Henry Barajas, he helped us come up with that.
You know, I saw Henry earlier. He's getting stories for the Tucson Weekly.
Yes.
And apparently he's performing comedy for anybody who might listen.
Henry is doing the Tucson Weekly stories. He's doing comic speak stories. And he's going to be performing in the show tonight. So he's going to be very tired.
He's like a triple dipper.
Yes. Henry and I are both doing the show tonight. The S&M comedy podcast guys are having a show at the Renaissance Hotel. And Henry and I are doing it tonight. And then Jacob's doing it tomorrow night.
Oh, very nice.
Sweet. Very nice.
So, let's talk about the characters in Orbital Decay. Is there any one character that sort of has the through line, or is it just a hodgepodge of things that occur to you in the middle of the night?
Yeah, we kind of let the characters direct everything, so I think each one is important to me. But I guess the one that is the standout kind of funny guy would be Hornick.
Christopher Hornick. He's effectively the main character. He's been, I would say, the story pretty much follows him throughout the arc. So
I like it. I like it. No, it's good. So is this guy going to be the character? Because you said earlier when we were chatting that you've done four issues. Right. And now you're trying to take it to a publisher.
Yeah.
Right.
And what will happen if a publisher picks it up?
Well,
other than they'll publish it.
Without giving you any spoilers.
No, we love spoilers. Because it's
we're trying to sell books.
Yeah,
it's right, right, right.
But it's only our mom who listens, so.
That's true. So, yeah, I don't mind. We, in this issue.
Issue four,
everybody dies. And there is no. No, I'm just kidding. That's not.
It's sort of like the
I want my money back.
It's like, the Red Wedding.
Basically.
Yeah.
That's a Game of Thrones reference. Very good.
It's a comic book and it's science fiction, so deaths are never permanent in either of those mediums, you know?
Marvel perfected that.
Yeah, it's, yeah.
So that's sort of the spoiler is by saying that death is never permanent.
Right, right.
Yeah. Well, but answer my question, though, earlier. You guys are publishing this guy by yourselves.
Yes.
And so you're hoping that someone's going to pick it up.
Right.
And then sky's the limit.
Right. So, after issue four, we kind of wanted to set a goal of focusing on getting it out to publishers before we continue it.
How do you do that?
Well, that's what we're going through, just working on getting the thing packaged, talking to the people about who to talk to, and just networking a little bit. So that's more our goal right now, is to start networking more.
Which is just as important to coming to an event like this as selling books. I mean, obviously we want to sell the books, we want to make our money back, but part of coming up here is meeting other writers, other creators in general, who can, you know, who make a good impression and develop a relationship over time that, you know.
Absolutely.
I mean, that's
network,
half the reason
network. Who are you guys hoping to meet up here? Who's number one target?
Well, we want to figure out who the number one target is before we start handing them out, if that makes sense. So we're kind of just shopping around looking for people, and I want to figure out who's the right company to publish our thing before just handing them to any specific person.
I would suggest Dark Horse. They're my favorite.
Yep.
And they're also a Dark Horse.
They are a Dark Horse, yep.
And it's a lesson we learned a year ago. We went to Emerald City Comic Con in Seattle, and we were just sort of handing the book out, not necessarily trying to find a publisher, just handing them to pros, and one person we handed the book to worked for a company that we'd be completely wrong for them. They handle a lot of superhero and action stuff, and he made it very clear. He said, you know, it looks good, but you guys got to realize that there's no way we would ever do this just because it's a totally wrong fit for us. And that's why we want to make sure we really do our research this time around and make sure we're very clear who we hand it to.
Oh, that's great.
Are there any writers or artists up here that you're trying to meet, or have you met a bunch of them already?
Yeah, I mean, part of it would be we come here to meet other artists and writers, but not necessarily to hook up with other writers and artists for this book. That's kind of something that we might do on a whim if we were interested in changing it. I've talked to some artists before about if they would be interested in drawing this, but nothing in particular that we've set our goals towards. Yeah.
In that situation, we really want to be trying to hook up with editors. They're the ones we really want to be giving the books to, and the one company in particular we were thinking about handing a book to doesn't have an editor here this weekend. So at this point, it's more just more networking than anything else, and then really getting a clear idea of what we need to have prepared, and then maybe just doing it old school and mailing stuff off to people and waiting for a response.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Good for you guys.
Well, excellent. So what's the biggest thing you want to get out of this Comic-Con?
Publisher.
Publisher. Also, we want to get more fans. Anybody that'd be interested in checking out the book helps
now,
out.
We have literally dozens of fans right now.
Dozens?
We want to make those.
Are you guys bigger than us?
So if people want a copy of Orbital Decay, or actually all four copies, issues 1 through 4, where would they go?
Well, in Tucson, you could get them at all of the four major comic book stores, and we're working on getting online versions or digital versions of the
book.
For
Comixology and all that?
Yeah, that's what we've been researching lately, too, is trying to get them out there. And then hopefully maybe talking to some... That's another option, too, is talking to some of the... There are some of the local stores from Phoenix here who are represented today. So we might want to try to talk to them and maybe branching out a little bit.
All right.
But the whole digital thing is an issue because in my...
No pun intended.
But in my my novice state of when I first started doing these books, they were kind of formatted weird. So I have to go back through the first couple of books and reformat
and
them to get them all fit to the right for...
Because of the digitization of the books.
So that should take him about 10 minutes. So
perfect.
That's the 10 minutes I don't have right now.
Well, this is pretty awesome, and we're pretty excited for you guys.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, we really appreciate it.
Absolutely. A couple of Tucson guys doing good. We like it. All right, folks. So thanks for tuning in on our little extra here on the Fred and Jeff Show.
No, this isn't an extra. This will probably be a show.
Wow.
Yeah, so we're going
to show.
We're going to commercial break.
Okay, so stick around for more here on the Fred and Jeff Show.
This portion of the Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by Barker Morrissey Contracting, Casa de la Luz Hospice, and 1702 Craft Pizza and Beer.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. I'm here with my little brother, Jeffrey.
Hola, Tucson.
And we are celebrating the people, the places, the events, history, and culture make living in Tucson and Southern Arizona so gosh darn wonderful.
But Fred, we're off topic.
I know we're off topic.
Completely off topic.
We're off geography.
Not only that, we're just indulging one of your loves.
We are at Phoenix Comic Con. And yeah, so we've been talking to some Tucson artists and writers.
Right.
But the Cyanide and Happiness booth is set up here at Comic Con.
And of course, it's one of your favorites.
It is. Actually, I don't know if you remember, yesterday I came by and I showed you on my phone the one about... The woman who
do you think about other people when we make love?
Yeah, not unless you're talking about when.
But who are we talking to, Fred?
Oh, that one, yes. Yeah, okay. Remember that one though.
So this is Rob Denblaker.
Yes,
and he's one of the artists. Now you said there's three of you guys who do the strip.
Yes, that's right. We each write and draw our own comics, so it's kind of like three comics intertwined into one. And our art styles are slightly different, but kind of the same, so okay. It's easy to follow.
Yeah, but you're all, like, sick, twisted.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, we are. I try.
How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing the comic for 9 years. It's been a job for about 6.
What happened the first 3 years?
We were just making comics on the internet, just a bunch of friends doing it as a hobby.
Okay.
And then you guys got discovered?
Well, this day and age, you don't really get discovered. You have to find your audience. So we've been independent from day one. So we're online comics, so there's no syndicates, no publishers involved. We put our stuff out there directly, and our fans just consume it directly from us. So there's no middlemen. And it's kind of an emerging industry that we're kind of in the middle of.
Good for you guys.
Yeah.
Where are you guys out of?
Our core business is based in Dallas. One of our writers is based out of Fort Collins, Colorado, though.
And then what about you?
I'm based in Dallas.
You're based in Dallas? So
yeah.
Two of you are in Dallas and one's in Fort Collins?
That's right.
Awesome.
Well,
awesome.
In this day and age, you know, you can be anywhere in the world and do this.
Yeah, we actually started that way. We didn't meet each other until the comic was already 2 years old. We these are all people I started the comic with were people who I met online, who I was friends with through animation communities, through different websites and stuff. So, yeah, we definitely built this business online. Before we brought it into like the real world, into an actual office, so it's kind of interesting.
So what does it start off as? You guys trying to outgross each other, or so you
kind of
more twisted than the other?
Started out with some twisted friends just trying to make each other laugh, and eventually more people than us started reading it.
So that's pretty cool. That's very cool. And now you've got all kinds of published books.
Yeah, we've got some independent books. We did two books with HarperCollins.
We've been moving more towards independent stuff lately. And, yeah, we've got plushies, all sorts of merchandise. We go to conventions all over the world, and it's a lot of fun.
It sounds great. Sounds like a lot of fun. Fred, what's your favorite strip?
Well, it's hard to describe them. We'll maybe post it on the website.
Yeah.
But one of my favorites is the one that we were talking about earlier where a wife and a husband are in bed. And the
they're having a conversation.
They're having a conversation.
Yeah.
And the wife asks the husband if he fantasizes about anybody else. And he said, the husband says, no, of course I don't. Unless you're talking about you when you were thinner.
Yeah. Very good. Very good.
So you guys have been doing this for 9 years?
Yeah.
How do you keep these things so fresh? Because, I mean, I follow you guys and there is nothing getting stale about what you guys do.
We have to invent new ways to write. Whether it's just hanging out, whether it's getting drunk, whether it's like getting frustrated and yelling at the walls, like there's a variety of ways to come up with a joke, and it kind of depends on the circumstance. So far, the fact that there's several of us working together, we're able to help each other out. Like we kind of support each other. So if one of us is in a rut, the other two can kind of pitch ideas and bounce things off and stuff.
Do you guys consider yourselves comics or artists?
A little bit of both. We write and draw. I don't know who said it, but there's a quote that I always think of. Good art can't save bad writing, but good writing can save bad art, which is very true. And that's why we try to shoot for mediocre writing and mediocre art, so we can kind of meet halfway. That's what we do.
All right, that's great.
Now, some of the comics, I mean, you know, the characters are attacking each other.
Yeah.
Is there any, like, basis in real life, you attacking some of your colleagues on the page?
I thought about it. if our comics were based in real life, we'd all be in prison by now. So most of them are completely fictionalized. Pretty much all of them are just made up. Most of them come from just asking, what if? Like, what if this happened? What if someone did this or said this? Even though we would never say or do anything that we draw.
Right, yeah. Right.
Yeah, you look very innocent. I mean, it's shocking. When I have a vision of the people who do cyanide and happiness as being just like completely, you know, depraved, long-haired.
We're,
you know,
depraved on the inside, but we like to be presentable.
That's awesome.
All right, cool.
Well, keep up the good work. It's great. We really enjoy it.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
Thanks, Rob.
All right, folks, we'll be right back. We got some words from our sponsor, so stick around for more on The Fred and Jeff Show. Mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll. Your mama don't dance and your daddy don't rock and roll. When evening rolls around and it's time to go to town, where do you go? To rock and roll.
This portion of The Fred and Jeff Show is brought to you by H&S Estate Garden, The Flight Grill at Pima Air and Space Museum, and PETA Jungle.
Now, time for more of the Fred and Jeff Show.
This is Fred and Jeff Show. This is Fred Ronstadt. And somewhere in this vast Phoenix Convention Center facility, I have managed to lose my little brother Jeff. I have no idea where he is. I think he said he was going to go look at the Lego display, which I don't know what that has to do with Comic-Con, except for maybe the Lego movie itself. But I found a friend, an old friend, who has been doing some cosplay and actually working for the con, G. Rinaldi. G., how you doing?
I'm doing good. I also have my friends here, Becky and Noah, who are cosplaying from Demonical Murder.
Hey, guys.
Hi.
Ladies. This is something that I need some education, because I've been at the con for 2 days, and the first day I was here with my son, Alec. And so we were walking around, and I would say, who's that? Who's that? Who's that? Because there's tons of people dressed up in all sorts of costumes.
Yeah.
And aside from, I mean, I'm not that hip. I know Batman and Robin, Wonder Woman, you know, some of the old school guys and gals. But I look around and I see characters that I just have no idea who they are.
Like all the animes?
Specifically all the animes. But I do know, like, it took me a couple seconds to figure it out, but there's some kids walking around with literally a square box on their head that's pixelated.
And it's Minecraft.
That's Minecraft. I knew that was Minecraft. So I knew that. I'm not totally, you know, lame, but...
Yeah.
So tell me exactly what cosplay is.
First of all, let's start very basic. What does cosplay stand for?
It originates from a combination of costume and play, role play. So it's just that, costume and role play. You make a costume, and you usually would like to act as your character when you're in costume, or when you're interacting with other people from the same show or series that you're doing.
So like when you walk around, you're walking around a convention here, and you see somebody from the same show, you like run lines with them from an episode, or...
If you know it and they know it, you can run up to them and quote something and hope they'll go with it. Sure.
So essentially it's like, you know, I'm an old dude. Back when I was in college and high school, there was this group called the Society for Creative Acronism. We were sort of like on the cutting edge back then. Dungeons and Dragons was like fairly new.
Yeah.
And a lot of people dressed up in costumes. But the Society for Creative Acronism actually got together. They got armor and weapons, and they'd go to Reed Park and beat the crap out of each other. I mean, literally, they had like baseball bats that they were calling two-handed swords.
Okay.
And they were taking like hard swings at these guys wearing costumes. Now, I don't see anybody like, you know, getting bloody up here.
Yeah.
So apparently it's sort of evolved from warfare tactics to very peaceful, happy things.
Well, yeah, like you have cosplay and you have LARPing.
So this is going to be an education. What is LARPing?
Live action role playing.
Okay, so that's like when you actually need a story and you're doing something, right?
Yeah, like the people that like to do the medieval type stuff and...
SDA, Dungeons and Dragons, sometimes Magic the Gathering.
I know Magic.
Yeah, Magic the Gathering.
Yeah, because Alec beats me on a regular basis when we play that game.
Yeah.
He actually is very skilled at not telling me what the rules are, and then he'll like pull cards out and say, "I can do this." I'm like, "Wait a second, you didn't say you can do that." He's like, "Oh, I forgot," and then he beats me. Okay, so LARPing. All right. So I'm working off on my point of reference. So, you know, we do a thing of Dungeons and Dragons, and there's a quest, and you have to go find something or kill something, and then you get gold or experience points, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. So I imagine LARPing is doing that in real life.
Yeah, kind of.
Well, so you have, like, a dungeon master and...
LARPing is a lot different from cosplaying, in my opinion, just because the way cosplaying is developed is that you make this costume, and you work really hard on it, and you go to these conventions to show it off and, you know, get pictures and meet friends that share the same interests. And with cosplaying, it's developed a lot from, you know, what you were saying earlier is that you act as your character, and it's not necessarily like that anymore. Just conventions are an easy way to show your talent and, like I said, make friends.
So I've noticed on the schedule there's like tons of breakout sessions on how to make your like cosplay armor, mm-hmm. and costumes, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, there's like a full spectrum of costumes here at the con. I mean, I've seen things that are like crappier than a dime store Halloween costume to something that is probably better than what you've seen in movies.
Yeah.
And okay, so you guys are dressed up. What are you dressed as? This G.
I'm dressed as 88 Cent. It's a kind of street version of a character from Homestuck.
No, okay, so again, this is a generational thing. So like an old fart like me, I have no clue what you're talking about.
Okay.
So, but this, if somebody's listening who's like, you know, younger, hipper, yeah. you know, has a clue, they would know what you're talking about.
Probably.
Okay.
Don't ask her to explain Homestuck.
No, okay, explain Homestuck.
No!
Basically, four kids play a game, meanwhile millions die over a workplace dispute concerning dress code.
Wow.
God bless. God bless you.
Is there a longer explanation?
Yes, but I'm not going to give it.
There's a lot of these dystopian kind of things. Is that sort of what this is?
Not really. It goes from not dystopian to sort of dystopian. Like, it's pretty normal until the meteors come, and then everything goes to hell.
Another thing that I want to add about cosplay is that... a lot of it is from different, you know, cultures. So you have kind of the anime, which is from Asian kind of culture, which is Japanese and things like that. And then you have Western. And that's kind of what Phoenix Comic Con is for more of the Western cosplayers. Like, you have comic books and movies and video games and books and TV shows, while in Japan you have the anime and...
The anime.
Excuse me. And you have... just more of that kind of separate things for cosplay. So, which is why in PCC you have more superheroes walking around.
But I've seen tons of, like, what I would assume to be anime characters.
Yeah, brightly colored hair, lots of cool armor, and like, big swords.
And there's, like, you know, schoolgirls and ponytails.
Yes.
That seems to be a big theme in anime.
It's a very big theme in anime. It's also a very big theme for people who just like to twist up their characters. They'll dress up as a guy in a schoolgirl uniform and be like, hey, I'm cute.
Let's take a step back to the beginnings for you guys. What actually got you interested in dressing up as what I would assume to be some of your favorite characters?
What got me interested is, I actually, the first cosplay I did was from this game called Kingdom Hearts, and my friends talked me into it, and before I knew it, I was spending a lot of time and effort on things like a wig, the costume itself, just kind of makeup. A lot of things go into it that you pay special attention to, and you want to put a lot of effort into it because it does end up showing if you have resources and all this other jazz, but I got into it because of my friends.
But it seems to me, I've actually known some cosplayers, they were like, you know, in their 20s, and they would spend probably, and they'd go to the San Diego Comic-Con.
Yes.
And like the 6 months leading up to that, that was their life, is building the costume.
Yeah, because for most people, it's a hobby. And then you have some people that take it very seriously, that can make a career out of it. And basically, you can spend 6+ months on a cosplay and over $500 on it. But you spend that kind of money and that kind of time, and obviously it's going to come out perfect, or the way you want it to, at least.
So you guys get all catty about, oh, look at that so-and-so, they're not, they didn't put the flower in the right spot, or...
Lots of people do that, but we don't really look at that kind of stuff because in a cosplay community, you don't want to be that person who's like, oh my god, you look like crap. Because you don't necessarily know, hey, this person doesn't have that kind of resources. Hey, this person, you know, didn't have enough time.
Or they might have made a creative choice.
There you go. Creative choices. Hey, I want to put this flower on top of my head instead of on my shirt.
And also, like, everybody starts somewhere. Not everybody has the same skill level. And there's kind of like a pie to cosplay. There's three things that you need at least two of. It's time, money, skill. And you want to have at least two of those things.
So if you have time and money, you don't necessarily need skill.
Yeah, like one of my personal pet peeves is seeing people that have completely bought outfits and calling it their own.
Cosplay, it's not necessarily just everything you make from scratch. Like, you can buy it and it's still cosplay. What I do is I alter it a lot. For my cosplay, I'm Sly Blue from Dramatical Murder. It's a leather jacket and it has white sleeves, and it starts orange and it fades into white. So instead of completely making the jacket from scratch, I just simply cut off the sleeves and added my own. And so I altered it so it was mine, but I still couldn't take full credit for it.
When you are choosing a character or a costume that you want to work on, what are some of the elements that you think are important? Like the challenge of the difficulty, or it's because you like have a favorite character? I mean, what goes into a choice when you finally come up, decide what costume you want? And by the way, there are a lot of people here, and I think G's one of them, that like has a costume for every single day of the con.
Yes.
A different costume for every day of the con. So what goes into that decision?
When choosing someone to cosplay, you need to keep in mind like your body type and your skill level. So you don't, like, if you're a novice and you're just learning how to sew, you obviously don't want to do this huge, extravagant ball gown from scratch, because you all start from somewhere. You don't want to jump into something that you're not prepared for. And also, you need to consider the time and money you need. So if it's 2 days before a con and you have $10 in your pocket and you want to do a Wonder Woman cosplay, I don't know. If you really want to, you could try and do it, but you need to keep that in mind. And also, if you want to do an extravagant cosplay, you need a lot of money and you need a lot of time.
You don't want to spend hundreds of dollars on fabric just to cut into it and be like, oops.
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you, that is a lot of cosplay. It's a lot of going, oops, and oh, why did I do that?
You always want to buy more materials than you need. So when you mess up, you have more room to work with.
This seems like, you guys are obviously really into this. Do you see this as being a future career? Like, you want to move to Hollywood and start building costumes for movies, or you know, have a just have like a mom and pop tailor shop?
Well, like I said earlier, some people build a career on it, and you know, not necessarily taking cosplay into that effect, but people will go to cosmetology school, take that up a level, and go to fashion designing, things like that. And you know, it's not a bad career, but you have to be willing to dedicate yourself to it.
Well, like, nothing is a bad career if you're passionate about it.
Sometimes. The real world is a little more cruel than that, but...
All right, there's this quote I like telling people. There will only be peace in the world when people recognize that there's as much dignity in writing a poem as there is in digging a ditch. So, any career is a great career if you have a passion for it.
It's a great career for you if you are passionate for it.
Yeah. If I don't want to be, flipping burgers, but somebody else...
Ah, there you go.
Yeah, but somebody else is like, this is the best job ever.
It could be.
It wouldn't be me. Obviously, it wouldn't be you.
Truly. But cosplay, for me at least, it's a very passionate hobby because it's like I've met some of my greatest friends because of it. I've had a lot of neat experiences dressing up as characters and whatnot and making friends that way and just being able to show off, you know, what I can do. For cosplay, things that go into it are, you know, time, effort, money, like G said. And cosplay for me is very diverse. I've seen lots of people cosplay. You don't have to be a certain body type. That's a thing that I hate seeing in this community, is that if you're not tall, you can't cosplay a tall person. If you're, you know, bigger, you're automatically ostracized because of it. And for me, cosplaying is about showing your affection for that character. You take in mind, hey, I want to cosplay this character because I really like them. They speak to me, blah, blah, blah. And you shouldn't have to be judged for that. You shouldn't have to feel bad for doing it because you don't look a certain way. And that's a lot that goes into this community, is you have people who are in it just for looks.
And you're saying that's a bad thing? Potentially a bad thing.
It's potentially a bad thing. It's like, you know, it's not terrible to look like your character. It's like totally A-plus awesome if you look exactly like the character. But I'm saying for the other people who are like, don't have that body type, or, you know, their wig is a little different.
So people should not be ashamed or stop themselves from portraying a certain character if they are not the perfect body type for that character.
Yeah.
So a short, fat guy like me should play Batman to his heart's content.
If you want to.
If that's where your heart goes. If that's where your heart takes you.
Is that where the river flows?
I think a bigger problem, though, is the people that constantly want popularity, though. That are like, I'm going to quit cosplaying because I don't have enough likes on my Facebook.
Yeah. Or like,
oh.
I don't know. I've had equally bad experiences my first time cosplaying where somebody didn't like my wig. And it didn't stop me because, like Becky said, you start from somewhere. Each hobby has to develop a talent. So it's like, you put enough time into it and you're going to go somewhere.
Okay, so we have a couple seconds left. Tell me, I'm going to have each one of you, tell me, what is the greatest thing that you have received or experienced through your cosplay experience, through cosplaying?
We'll
start with Becky, the silent one.
So a couple years ago, I cosplayed Jack Frost to Phoenix Comic Con, and a lot of kids approached me, and it just made them really happy. So I think a great gift I get from cosplaying is just seeing others being happy from what I create and the friends that I make. I don't know, it's rewarding.
Excellent.
A thing I find good about cosplaying is the satisfaction you get from it. And you work months on end on this costume, and sometimes you feel down and you want to stop. And when you're done with it, and you make friends and memories and all of this other stuff, it just makes you feel good that you kept through and through with it and worked on it.
Excellent. And G, you get to play, you're batting cleanup.
Okay. It was, like a couple days ago, my friend gave me a letter that she wrote me. saying, because a while back she said she wanted to commission someone for a costume, and I told her that she should try sewing herself. And she told me that I, like, inspired her to start sewing and to practice and stuff, and that it was, like, one of the greatest things she's done. And for me, that's, like, the biggest thing, being able to possibly mentor people and give advice and
that's
just
great.
Help people.
That's awesome. All right, well, you guys have fun at the rest of Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah.
We will have pictures of you guys in your costumes on our website. And, folks, I'm putting an all-points bulletin out for Jeff. He's somewhere in Phoenix. If you see him, please help him get home. And we'll talk to you next week on the Fred and Jeff Show.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way. Gone are the dark clouds that had me blind. It's gonna be a
The Fred & Jeff Show is brought to you by our friends at Tucson Appliance, Unicom Graphics, and Architecture Design Group.